Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We are in lesson 322 now, and we're in the book of Numbers in chapter 4. Last time we stopped with verse 8, where we read there, "And they shall spread upon them a cloth of scarlet, and cover them with a covering of sealskin, that is sealskin, and shall set the stairs thereof." In other words, some of the items of the tabernacle. And as you go through that, you see it very plainly. You know, God wanted in essence to give them, and He gave them, detailed instructions in packing the tabernacle, in setting it down, and putting it together. You see, everything had to be done in accordance with the detailed instruction of God. And you see the personal involvement there of the God of Israel. You see, everything was given them in detail. Nothing was left to the priesthood to decide on their own. And in essence, if we're to develop the nature of God, we should come to that realization. Nothing that we do in life should be left to our own understanding. You see? Generally speaking, obviously, there are tiny little details. You know, if you want to eat 2 carrots or 3 carrots, you know, that's not what we're talking about. But in terms of the relationship that we have with God, in obedience to Him, the laws that He gave us, you see, what He gave us, He gave us. What He didn't, He didn't. He leaves it to us. But all that should be done, even then, in accordance with the principles that God gives us. And when we train ourselves to be that way, you see, that's how we begin to understand what Paul was telling Timothy. You know, from a child you have known the Holy Scriptures. Not, you know, you just heard about them, but you've known them. You see, the real intimacy of knowledge. You know what they say, you follow what they say, a good understanding of all that do His commandments, not that don't. You see, he's talking about an intimate knowledge of the law that makes it possible for a person to have salvation. Why? Because salvation is a process. We're being saved from spots and blemishes in our nature and character, and as we obey the laws of God and we walk in them, well, there goes another spot, there goes another blemish, and the process of salvation moves on until we get to the point where we totally walk in the law of God in total obedience, you see, and that's how we become as a lamb without spot and blemish. That's how God washes us, by His Word. A lot of people are just an ethereal concept. They don't know exactly what it means. You see, when you study the law of God, you realize that. When you do everything as the Lord commanded Moses, as the Lord commanded anyone, you see, to tell you, be it, you know, any of the prophets, or later on, in the person of Jesus Christ, who came and spoke in person to them. Well, before that, He spoke to Moses, and then His disciples, as they gave them instructions. And so when we follow all those things, you see, as the Lord commanded, then salvation is accomplished. So salvation is not something that, you know, only God gives us and we do nothing, you see. We just sit there and it's done to us. No, salvation is something that we are partakers of. We are engaged in it. That's what Paul says. Work your own salvation with fear and trembling. What does that mean? You can do it on your own? No, what he's talking about is when you respond to the commandments of God and you obey them and you walk in them, as Israel was commanded to do as the Levite and the priests and the prophets of God, and the disciples, as they do it, that's how we walk our own salvation with fear and trembling. Now, on the other hand, there is a process that God Himself is involved in, and we cannot do it for Him. But He cannot do for us what we're supposed to do for ourselves. Isn't it going to obey His law, you see, for us, and we don't have to obey it? That's what people say. Well, I don't need to keep the Sabbath because Jesus Christ is the Lord of the Sabbath. He did it for me. There's no such a thing. You see? And that's unfortunately where the majority of people are. Since they do not study the law of God, they don't understand, they don't comprehend what they're reading in the so-called New Testament. And so they invent their own concepts and ideas. And they really do not understand it. And that's very unfortunate. But then on the other hand, when you think about it, as Paul said, the reason for it is because the carnal mind is an enemy of God. It is not subject to the Torah of God, the law of God. Neither indeed can be. And that's where the problem is. Or as I say in Hebrew, this is where the dog is buried. Yeah, that's where the problem is. So when we study the law of God and we obey it and we walk in it, And we follow every detail as we see here. That's the nature and the mind of God that we see in motion here. This is the mind of Jesus Christ. Let this mind be in you, which was in Jesus Christ. And if you do not study His nature and His law, you would not know at that point what Paul is talking about. You think that you do. You think that Jesus Christ, you know, came into being 2,000 years ago, and that's the beginning of His history. And so from that point on, whatever He did, well, read the New Testament, follow in His footsteps. You know, what would Jesus do? People say, they don't know what they're talking about. You go to Genesis 1:1 and you'll see what would Jesus do. And Genesis 1:2 and so forth. You see? And Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy and all the judges and the prophets and the Psalms and the writings of the disciples, the Gospels in between. That's what it means. Let this mind be in you, because that Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And it is this law that Jesus is going to write on the hearts and the minds of His people Israel and those that, you know, are being grafted along the way. And then eventually, through them, He's going to teach all mankind to do likewise. You see, a lot of people really are in ignorance to a large degree, thinking that they are rich and increasing goods and they know everything and they lack nothing. When Christ said, look at you. You're blind, you're wretched, you're poor, you're miserable. You see, you're filthy, you're polluted, you're unholy, and so forth. And you think you're doing great. That's exactly where a lot of us are to one degree or the other. That's very tragic. And oftentimes it's not because of rank rebellion, you know, or often rebellion on the part of many. Just they've been misthought, misinformed, not given the proper knowledge and understanding. And they were being led by blind teachers. And when the blind follows the blind, as Christ would say, they all fall into the ditch. You see? When we study the law of God, as David would say, you know, my eyes are open. I'm wiser than my teachers. I have more understanding than the ancients of old. Why? Because I study your law. And he studied it day and night, and he walked in it day and night. You know? And then, you know, when you understand that, and you go to Psalm 119, you begin to comprehend what he's talking about. You see? All these things that we are reading here that reveal to you the nature and the mind of God, that teaches you how to serve Him, how to obey Him, how to please Him, how to walk with Him, how to be in Him. How is it that the Father and Christ are going to abide in us? Through their Word. That's how. You see? That's how they do it. And when we eat His flesh and drink His blood, this is what we are doing here now. And throughout the entirety of the book, which is one book, you see? Then that is fulfilled, and that's how the process of salvation comes about. It's a process. It's not, you know, something long time ago, you know, I gave my heart to the Lord and the Spirit came, that's it, I've been saved, now I can sit in my rocking chair. You see, that's foolishness. A lot of people are in that category, unfortunately, and they'll waste all their life in foolishness, you know, a little bit of good here and there, and come before Christ and totally be rejected. Now, that's a horrible tragedy. And so, hopefully, some people are learning a few things and waking up and having their eyes a little bit open and comprehending and begin to have a real, genuine relationship with their Creator, with their Savior and Maker, and they do their part of the salvation. Work out their own salvation in fear and in trembling, not with contempt, you see, not in disdain, not with this attitude, well, that's Jewish, that's not for me, that's old stuff, you see, that's not what God is talking about. And working out your own salvation with fear and trembling. So Moses, the priests, the Levites, they're all doing exactly what Christ is telling them. They are working out their own salvation with fear and trembling because they know that if they do not, the fate of the two sons of Aaron will be theirs. And when people have no fear of God, well, they do their own thing. And too many of us are doing our own thing. We have no appreciation, no knowledge, no comprehension of the law of God that the New Testament is based on. When the law of God is written in our hearts, in our minds, that's how we become a part of the New Testament. And if it's not, we're kidding ourselves that we are members. And some people like to brag, you know, we're a New Testament church. What do you mean by that? You never studied the law of God. How can you be a member of the New Testament church? You see? People live lies, believe in lies, teach lies, preach lies. You see? Until the last moment when they find out, oops, That's too late at that point. And so we continue to read here in verse 12, and they shall take all the vessels of ministry wherewith the minister in the sanctuary and put them in a cloth of blue. Well, actually, I think we skipped something here. Let's read verse 10. And they shall put it, speaking about the candelabra, you know, the light. They shall put it, we should go to verse 9 to have the background here in a proper way. And they shall take a cloth of blue and cover the candlestick of light and its lamp and its tongs and its snuff dishes and all the oil vessels thereof wherewith the minister unto it. Now this thing was not something that was one piece where you can just carry it and move it, you see. There were different parts there, and he had to empty the oil, and obviously it could not be lit at that point. And that's talking about the point at the time when you move it from place to place. It's not talking about the stationary place that became in Shiloh, you see, and later on in other location until it finally ended up in the temple. And so these are things that you're doing under these circumstances. So, you know, this part of the law, in essence, you might say all these instructions of the movement, you know, the packing and leaving and all that, was applicable only under certain circumstances. So all these instructions here were done away with, you see, when the temple was built. No more. Or when it was in Shiloh, you see. The only time they reactivated all this set of instructions and they had to go to this book and find out exactly how to do it is when they moved it from Shiloh, you see, to Jerusalem. And even then, if you remember the case of Uzzah, they did most everything that they were supposed to do. One instruction they didn't pay attention to, and God struck Uzzah, and David was angry with God. He was afraid of God. He didn't know what was happening there until he came up to his own and remembered that God is a holy God. You do not mock God, even if your name is King David and you are a prophet or a king, whatever. God is not a respecter of persons. You see? And Uzzah was a priest, should have known better. And so both of them were negligent. Both David, who should have known better, being a prophet of God and a man that studied the law of God, and the priest that should have known it. But you see, they haven't done it for a long time. So instead of going to the book and finding out exactly how to do it according to the, as God commanded Moses, well, they decided one detail, you know, that's no big deal. God wouldn't mind. They did not even bother to study it. And God let them know exactly what he thought about it, just like he let the two sons of Aaron know what he thought about it when he gave them a very plain instruction and they did not follow it. So the sons of Aaron did not work out their salvation with fear and trembling and paid with their life for it. Uzzah hadn't done it. He paid with his life for it. And there was another occasion before that when the ark was being brought from the Philistines. A lot of people, when it was stationed in a city called Beth Shemesh, they just, you know, filed through and were looking into the ark, and they had no business doing it because God forbade them to do it. And God smote many of them. A lot of them died. You see? That's how we work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. We do not play games with the laws of God. And if they're applicable, we do them. You see? If they're not, that's a different story. And so, this is what we read here. They had to do it exactly as God told them. Take it all apart, put it in a bag, special one that was made for it, and carry it on a pole. In other words, don't hold it in your own hands. You see? Don't have it exposed. They had to do it exactly as the Lord commanded Moses. That's why this Jesus Christ said in Malachi to this last generation and for all to hear in between. Hear the law of Moses, my servant. Remember it. Hear it. Obey it. Walk in it. Which I gave, you know, to Moses and Horeb for all of Israel and the statutes, you know, all of it. You see, a lot of people just throwing the Ten Commandments all the time. That's the law of God. That shows an awful lot of ignorance on their part. It's a problem, you know, oftentimes the people, that's a dead giveaway. They do not sit down and study the law of God and they don't know it. You see, he's talking about the entirety of the instructions that he gave, because you miss one of them that is applicable and you're going to have to pay the consequences for it. He says, you remember those things. Or else, I'm going to bring utter destruction on the whole earth. And people do not learn that. You know, they read that statement, they don't even know what they're reading. They don't comprehend it. Why? Because they do not study the law of God. And when you don't know what he's talking about. That's very tragic, again. And so he says, that's why the way you handle, you know, the candelabra, you know, the light, and you put it on a bar and you carry it that way. And verse 11, and upon the golden altar shall they spread a cloth of blue and cover it with a covering of sealskin, and shall set the staves thereof, you know, then you carry it like that. Everything had to be done according to instruction. And they shall take all the vessels of the ministry, that is, of the work, and they shall take all the vessels of ministry, you see, and call it charet. Charet means, you know, service or ministry. And, you know, the entirety of the work that was done in the temple was called the avodah later on. And that's how many of the angels are also called by that name. An angel, ministering spirit, Malachi HaSharet. You see, to this very day, you hear the terminology in the Jewish community. And there's a famous song about the angels of the ministering angels. They sing it in the beginning of the Sabbath, every Sabbath day. And they shall take all the vessels of ministry, wherewith the minister in the sanctuary, and put them in a cloth of blue. Everything was blue. You know, that's the sky. That means the divine presence is upon it. That's in essence what it means. God is in the heavens, the sky. And so that's symbolic of that. And it shall cover them with a covering of sealskin, and shall put them on a bar, and they shall take away the ashes from the altar. So you got to clean up everything, and some people had to be responsible for it. Not everybody wanted to do it, did it. And so I had to clear the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth thereon. Not blue, but purple. Why? You know, what do you have in the altar? In the altar you have the sacrifices. That means blood. So you put something that is relevant to that. Purple. On the others, you put blue. There were no sacrifices there, no blood. And, you know, all the things were very important. You could not mix one with the other. They all have the special meanings. 14. And they shall put upon it all the vessels thereof, wherewith the minister upon it, that is, put it on the altar, all the items that are necessary there to offer the sacrifices, just put it on the altar and carry it, you know. And so he says, put it there, the fire pans, the flesh hooks, and the shovels, and the basins, and all the vessels of the altar, and they shall spread upon it a covering of sealskin, and set the staves thereof, and Aaron and his sons, and that is verse 15, and when Aaron and his sons had made an end of the covering of the holy furniture, you see, that is the holy, in Hebrew you read, Kli HaKodesh, which means the instruments of holiness, you see, instruments of holiness, well here they called it holy furniture, English for that, and all the holy vessels, as the camp is set forward, after that the sons of Kohath shall come to bear it. So when the family of Aaron itself does that, then comes the family of Kohath, and they are the carriers of all these items. And they all had to do exactly in every detail as the Lord commanded Moses, according to the law. After that the sons of Kohath shall come to bear them, but they shall not, mind you, they shall not touch the holy things, lest they die. Now we're talking about the priest or the family of Kohath. You see? Because now everything is covered up. So don't you stick, you know, your finger and or your hand under it to touch the item itself. You see? And the penalty of death was right there. Sin is a transgression of the law. Some people think, well, you know, transgress the Ten Commandments, you will be put to death. Well, God says no. Everything that I've told you not to do, if you transgress that, you're going to be put to death. The entirety of the law of God has to be taken into account. You see? And this is a physical thing, you know. You touch an item there, and God says you are dead meat. You see? So let's understand, you know, the concept of the commandments of God. You know, if you shall enter into life, keep the commandments. Yes, he gave him an example of some of the ten, but he's not meaning, you know, that's the only thing you need to keep and forget all about the rest. You see, that's only men of ignorance that come up with this understanding. You see, there are an awful lot of things that if you did or you didn't do, you were put to death. They're all important in the sight of God. And we do not play games with anything, and we cannot allow any spot or any blemish. Spotted blemish is basically disobedience to the law of God, any instruction, whichever it may be. You see, in this case, you touch any of the items there, even if you are a priest from the family of Kohat, and your responsibility is to carry it, God says, no A's, yes and buts, you're dead. And He's going to take care of it. You don't need to have, you know, court and prison and judges and witnesses and lawyers and things like that. You see? God takes care of that. And so that's what He says here. Don't touch it, lest they die. These things are the burden of the sons of Kohat in the tent of meeting. Verse 16, and the charge of Eleazar, the son of Aaron. At this point, you know, his father is the high priest. Later on, he became the high priest. So that's his responsibility at this point, being the son of the high priest. He says, and the charge of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, shall be the oil for the light and the sweet incense, that is, and the continual meal offering and the anointing oil. He shall have the charge of all the tabernacle. He's the chief of staff there under his father, and of all that therein is, whether it be the sanctuary or the furniture thereof. So God gives instructions to everyone. He's calling Eleazar to this job. That's what He gives him. Nobody else takes over, you see. As a matter of fact, even his father couldn't do that. If God gave it to Eleazar, Eleazar is the one supposed to do it. And that's the way to serve God. Do what He says. Do not lean to your own understanding. And we always do. We've got an intellect, we want to use it. We learn that from a very young age. We discover we've got a mind, and we want to do our own thing. You know, and then we have to be spanked by our parents until we learn the lesson. You do what I tell you to, because I'm your parent. And that's what God is trying to teach us from a very young age. Just do what I tell you to do, and things will be fine. And the spirit of rebellion is constantly in us, and we are the enemies of God in that way, you see. And we are carnal in so many ways, and do not do the things that we should do, and we know better oftentimes. As Paul said, I know better. I know what I'm supposed to do, but I don't find myself doing it because there is that law of the flesh in me. That's a rebellious tendency that is in all of us to do our own thing. Hey, I'm an old man, or I'm a young man, I'm a teenager, I've got my own mind. Don't tell me what to do. You see? And that's the way we function. And we don't realize where that spirit comes from. This is what makes us children of disobedience. Children of another spirit, of another God. And we have to get rid of that. Humble ourselves before the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt us. We should not exalt ourselves. And yet that's our nature, unfortunately. And we're paying the penalty again and again and again, and we don't seem to be learning now and then as we should be. Verse 17, and the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, cut you not off the tribe of the families of the Kohathites from among the Levites. Now how would you do it? Well, He's giving them an instruction here. But thus do unto them, that they may live and not die. When they approach unto the most holy things, Aaron and his sons shall go in and appoint them, every one, to his service and to his burden. And that's the way you do it, because if that's not the way it's done, God says, I'm going to kill them. And people in their ignorance say, they look at that and say, well, what a wrathful God. And this is Jesus Christ we're talking about here. He is giving these instructions. And people don't realize that. They think, well, that's the old harsh monster, you know, the father. That's the attitude of many, unfortunately, in their ignorance. And they don't understand that. That our God is a consuming fire, and it is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the Eternal. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of Jesus Christ. You see? Whether it be the Father of Jesus Christ, it doesn't make any difference. We do not despise His law and get away with it. And that's what He's saying here. You know, they better do it properly. And Aaron and his sons are going to give them exactly the instructions, each one of them, what to do, and you follow their example or else. You see? That's what He says. You know, make sure that they stay alive by obeying My voice and commandments. We're talking about the priesthood here. But the Kohathites, that had the most important job here, in essence, of the other two families, you know, of the three families, that had the most serious business to do. And if they didn't do it right, God said, you'll die. And so right here, when they approach unto the most holy of things, Aaron and his sons shall go in and appoint them everyone to his service and to his burden. You don't appoint yourself. You don't ordain yourself. You don't take it upon yourself. You don't say, I'm just as good as you are. You see? You don't have this competition there. You don't have this attitude of, you know, men saying that or women saying that. You know, I'm just as good as you are. I can do it too. You see why we're doing all these things that we're doing? We have no respect to God. We have no respect to the knowledge of God, to the law of God. We haven't been taught the law of God. The fear of God was not placed in us. We do not know our God. You see, we do not fear Him. We do not tremble before Him. That's the reason why we act the way we do. A lot of smart alecks, men and women, doing their own thing. You see? That's where we are today, unfortunately. And we do not realize, you know, in what condition we are. And unless we get rid of that, we're going to be in a place that is not going to be a pleasant place to be. And so, this is what he says. This is what you do, this is what you tell them, this is what they do, or else they're all dead meat. That's in essence what he's telling him. And so, he says, Aaron and his son shall go in and appoint them, everyone, to his service. You go here, you do this. I don't want to do it. What do you mean you don't want to do it? You see, you cannot have this kind of an attitude among them. And they all followed, they all feared, they all trembled, they all worked their own salvation with fear and trembling, literally, or they were dead. You see? You begin to understand when you go through that, what it means to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Just because we don't see God, you know, we don't see His wrath and fury and punishment, we don't see His face, we don't see how He looks at us when we do certain things, you see? Because of that, we say, oh, who cares? Nobody knows, nobody sees, I can do my own thing. And we do not do the work of God and do not work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. You see, that's where we are, unfortunately. And so God says that's the way it is. Everyone is going to be appointed to a service, and God is the one that appoints them, and God is the one that, you know, as Paul would say later on, God is the one, and Paul, you know, is raised on the law of God. And so if you don't know his background, you don't know what he's talking about, you cannot appreciate his words. He said, look, God put us, everyone, you know, in the body, according to, you know, whatever he feels like it. He says, I want you here, and I want you here, and I want you here, and you do this, and you do that. He said, you cannot say, well, I don't want to do this, I want to do that. You see, I don't like being the finger, or the hand, or the leg, I want to be the mouth, and so forth. He says, no, you don't do that. You function as a body. And the body has many members, and each one has a responsibility, and you do what you are told. You see? That's how we learn all these things. And so when you study later on the writings of the apostles, if you don't have this background, you really don't comprehend nor appreciate nor understand what they are talking about. And so that's what they're supposed to do in verse 20. And they shall not go in to see the holy things as they are being covered. You know, wait outside until that is done, lest they die. And God repeated that several times. And they learned that. So they worked out their own salvation with fear and trembling, and they remained alive. And now we read in verse 21, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, take the sum of the sons of Gershon. Now we're talking about the second another group of the priests, the sons of Gershon, also by their fathers, so the Gershonites, fathers' houses, by their families, from 30 years old and upward until 50 years old, you shall number them, all that enter in to wait upon the service, to do the service in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the families of the Gershonites. Now the Kohathites, the first family, had the responsibilities. The Gershonites had a different responsibility, and there was no competition there. So he says this is the service of the families of the Gershonites in the service, in bearing burdens. Just like, you know, you would read later on what the Apostle Paul says, you know, God made, you know, some apostles, some prophets, some teachers, some this and some that. You see, whatever God made us, whatever God called us to do, whatever responsibilities God gave us, whatever talents and abilities, that's what we should do. You see, a lot of people like to do it all. They think, you know, I'm good for everything. And others say, no, I want to compete. I don't like to do this. I want to do that. You see, that's not the way holy people function. And so we learn that as we study the law of God. And those become patterns in our own way of thinking, to function in this manner, in harmony, in order, in obedience, in fear, in trembling. You see, when we do all those things, we have nothing but joy and harmony and order. And if we do not, then we have what we have today. Divisions and strife and competition and putting down each other and speaking evil of one another and all kinds of organizations and different leaderships. That's the result of disobedience, which means confusion, which means Babylon. And God says, you are in Babylon. The way you function, the way you are, your divisions, your strife, all your problems, all these differences in teachings and understanding, comprehension and all that, that's because you are in Babylon, and God says, come out of it. Come out of it. You see? And one of these days, the hard way, unfortunately, we're going to learn to do it. Unless some of us have the fear of God in us, and we work out our own salvation with fear and trembling, and also with the knowledge of how to do it. People do not serve the law of God will never know how to do it, unfortunately. And so he says, this is what the Gershonites are doing here, in contrast to the Kohathites, in serving, in bearing burdens. They shall bear the curtains of the tabernacle, and the tent of meeting, its covering, and the covering of the seal skin that is above upon it, and the screen for the door of the tent of meeting, and the hangings of the court, and the screen for the door of the gate of the court, which is by the tabernacle and by the altar round about, and their cords and all the instruments of their service, and whatsoever there may be to do with them, therein shall they serve. In other words, all those items that I told you, etc., etc., everything that has to do with it. You see, in this case, he was not going to enumerate every tiny little detail, but at least you know what he's talking about. You do not invent your own information here. You see, this is an awful lot of teaching material that you have here in the nature and the mind and the character and the personality of God. And some people think, well, you know, this is just a letter of the law. There is nothing in it. Why bother? Why study it? You know, let us go to the New Testament where we find the spirit of the law. And we don't know what we are talking about when we talk like that. You know, we're exposing our own shame and nakedness when we talk like that. And one of these days, we're going to be uncovered for what we are. Without the garments of righteousness, plain naked before God. And so, he says, this is what you do. Verse 27, at the commandment of Aaron and his sons shall be all the service of the sons of the Gershonites in all their burden and in all their service, and he shall appoint unto them in charge all their burden. This is the service of the families of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting. And so Aaron and his sons were going to be in charge, and all the other families, obviously, were supposed to be under their supervision and command. And they could not have, that is, if they all were obedient to God, they could not have competition and strife and divisions, and each one does his own thing, and different administrations, and that's exactly what we have today. And the reason is because people do not really, when you think about it, had we all obeyed Jesus Christ, had we all obeyed God, had we all walked in the same path and way, and lived by the same law, we wouldn't have all this confusion and division. So we justify that based on this and that and the other thing, and abuse, and because of that we have what we have. Well, one of these days, obviously, it's not going to be that way anymore. And verse 28, this is the service of the families of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting, and their charge shall be under the hand of Itamar, the son of Aaron the priest. And so, Gershonites were supervised again under the supervision of one of the sons of Aaron. As for the sons of Merari, you shall number them, in verse 29, by their families, by their fathers' houses, from 30 years old and upward, even unto 50 years old, shall you number them. And that was the first time at that point, that's how they numbered them, from 30 and up. After that, the way it worked out, at age 20, they began to serve, sort of trainees, and they had a special name for that. And then after that, at the age of 30, they were inducted officially into that office, and that's in essence what you see with John the Baptist. Until 30, he was not to begin his ministry, and Jesus Christ, until 30, he was not to begin his ministry, for the simple reason that was the official time that the priests, the servants of God, obviously not all prophets were in that category, because some of them were very young, like Jeremiah, and Samuel began as a child. But generally speaking, 30 was the age of official service. And so this is what they numbered them at this point. And this is what we read here. They were supposed to be numbered from 30 years old and upward, even unto 50 years old, you shall number them, everyone that enters upon the service. So that's the time when they officially enter into the service. And this is what they have done here. And in this case, it's called Avodah. Again, as mentioned before that, they use basically two terms here, Sharet, which means to serve, and Avodah means to work. And so that was the original, that is, you know, the official terminology of the entirety of what they've done. You see, it was called the work. And verse 31, and this is the charge of their burden according to all the service in the tent of meeting, the boards of the tabernacle and the bars thereof, and the pillars thereof, and the sockets thereof, and the pillars of the court round about, and their sockets, and their pins, and their courts, and even all their pertinence, and all that pertains to their service. So if you were a priest, if you grew up in that family of the priesthood, and you went up to the temple, this is what your father will teach you, or your uncle, and your brother, whatever it may be. You know, this is what we're supposed to do, this and this and this and that, and you learn that, you memorize that, you know exactly what you're supposed to do. And every generation, that's how they inducted into service the new coming priests. And they had to know all these things, and they had to know what they are not supposed to do, you see, and they had to know what they're supposed to do. And when they all followed in that way, then there was no confusion and no division and no fighting and no bickering and no, you know, I don't like you, whatever it may be, I'm going somewhere else. And that's in essence they were supposed also to govern Israel and teach them to be likewise, to do everything in order, you see. And the only way we can know that, the only way all of us can know that, is when we go to the book of the law which God commanded Moses, that gives us in detail what is our responsibility, you see, and how we should behave, and how we can have unity and harmony apart from the law of God. If we do not all obey the same law of God, obviously we're not going to have unity, because the law of God demands unity. And that's what you see here, that God in detail told them exactly what they're supposed to do and who's supposed to do it, you see. And so when you see later on the rebellion of Korah, it's basically somebody that decided, no, he does not like to go along with that. Well, God was not about to tolerate that rebellion there, you know, to set a precedence for Israel and the priesthood to follow in that way. And this were the priests that rebelled of the family of Korah. So he just simply put an end to it at that point. And that was an example for the priesthood for a long, long time after that, remembering what happened to Korah. And so God told them that this is what you do, and all that pertains to their service, again verse 32, the second half, and by name you shall appoint the instruments of the charge of their burden. You see? So you don't have any confusion there. Total harmony. The laws of God that exist, that make it possible for the universe to exist in harmony and unity, are all definite, are all specific, are all in order, and there is no confusion there, you see. God calls all things by name for a specific purpose, and that's the way we should function. And oftentimes we do not even know what our talents and our abilities are, as we should, you see. And oftentimes, unfortunately, we're not allowed to exercise our abilities and talents by those who want to take it all to themselves. And so that too creates confusion and problems. And then when people have a little freedom, well, now they do whatever they want to do. Verse 33, this is the service of the families of the sons of Merari, according to all their service in the tent of meeting, under the hand of Itamar, the son of Aaron. So he was in charge of that family. And then you read in verse 34, and Moses and Aaron and the princes, you see, the exalted ones, and you know, the Nesi'im, and the actual meaning of Nasi means to be lifted up. You know, you lift up someone, that is, you lift him up higher than you. The word Nasa means to lift up or to raise. You see, so they are the raised up, they are the lifted up, and from that, obviously, the understanding is that they are the exalted ones. You know, once you have lifted them up there, you know, now they are exalted. But, you know, it's not exalted in the sense of arrogance and haughtiness and pride, you see. And so that's what a prince means. Verse 34, And Moses and Aaron and the princes of the congregation numbered the sons of the Kohathites by their families and by their fathers' houses, from 30 years old and upward, even unto 50 years old, everyone that entered upon the service. And that's when he began to number them, as soon as they entered. Before that, they were not allowed, by law, to number them. And that's the way God made it to be. So, they entered upon the service, for the service in the tent of meeting. Verse 36, and those that were numbered of them by their families were 2,750. These are they that were numbered of the families of the Kohathites, of all that did service in the tent of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron numbered according to the commandment, again, according to the commandment of the Lord, of the Eternal, by the hand of Moses. So everything that went into the tabernacle, every detail in the building of the tabernacle, the colors, you know, the way to take it up and put it down, and the service and all that, God left nothing for Moses to decide, nothing for Aaron to decide. You see, that's how God does His work. Now, we haven't learned that. We do things on our own. Much of the work that is being done by people in the name of God is done, you know, with the knowledge and understanding that people have. In other words, they lean to their own knowledge and understanding. And so, you know, we look to the world, we look to our own experiences and our own talents and abilities and things like that. We lean to our own intelligence and so forth and so forth. And that's what Christ said. That's what He said in the Hebrew Scriptures. That's what He said in the New Testament. It's not by might, and it's not by power, but by My Holy Spirit, as it said to Zerubbabel, as you read in the book of Zechariah and Haggai, you see. And that's the way God does His work, and He means it. And when people do things on their own, obviously, those are human efforts and human input and human results, and all those will vanish. And that's why you see organizations come and go, you see, because God is not in it. Oh, you know, partially He may be there to the degree that people allow Him to be in it. And that's unfortunately all, you know, that we are going to allow God to do a part of it, and then the rest we're going to do on our own. Well, people that totally and wholly are given to Him are going to rely on Him in everything. You see? And that's what Paul is talking about. Whatever you do, in word or in deed, do it as unto the Lord. And how would you do it as unto the Lord? Just by sitting down and, you know, leaning to your own understanding? Obviously not. People who can do that, people have to be very close to God, very devout, very much in tune with God, in tune with His law, fully, you know, understanding His law, studying it, meditating on it day and night. You see, and that's how His word abides in us. That's how His thoughts, His feelings, and emotions abide in us. That's how the Father and the Son come and live their lives in us through their teachings. You see, which are spirit. You see, the teachings of God, the words of God, the instructions of God are spirit. That's what Christ was saying. My word is spirit. And unless those who eat His flesh and drink His blood, which is His teachings, His instructions, His laws and commandments, from, you know, Genesis 1:1 to the last verse, unless they study them and meditate on them, as David would say, you know, that this is what he did, all, you know, an awful lot. He meditated on it day and night. And as God, the King of Israel, that became later on Jesus Christ, that He was always Jesus Christ, but, you know, in person He's known as Jesus Christ, the Savior, the Anointed Savior, and He was always the Anointed Savior of Israel. God always used Him to deal with Israel in person, while He Himself He did not. You see? Well, He's the one that instructed us and taught us a lot of these things. And He made it very plain that unless we eat His flesh and, you know, drink His blood, there is no life in us, that is, and without Him, as He told us in John 15, without Me, you know, I'm the vine and you are the branches, you see. Without Me, you can do nothing. So what happens when we do things and they are not with Him in mind? And we do not study and meditate on His word day and night? We can do nothing. That's exactly what He was telling Joshua. You see, Moses, the one that obeyed everything that I told him, he was faithful in all My house, as the Apostle Paul would say in the book of Hebrews. You see, he did everything according to My will, and I was with him all the time. But now he said, he's dead, but I'm going to be with you. You see, Moses is dead, but I don't die. I go on forever, so I'll be with you. So rely on me just like Moses did in everything. And we have many examples. When things were brought to Moses, he didn't know what to do with them. He said, so he went to God. He said, what am I supposed to do with that? He didn't sit down and say, okay, well, you know, I know the will of God. You know, just come to me, I'll tell you what to say. Well, that's the nature of many who are in the ministry. You see, they rely on their own understanding and they think they know it all. And you just come to them and they'll tell you everything. That's haughtiness and arrogance when you think about it. And so many, and the younger they are, the more they have it. You see, as we grow older, we begin to understand and realize that decisions that we make have a great impact and they can affect adversely a lot of people, and not only on a one-generation basis. It may affect many things that come later on, generations to come. And unless we're constantly studying the law of God day and night and understand it, well, obviously we'll make many mistakes. Anyway, we'll stop at this point. Greetings to all of God's people. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph.